From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, Yale economist Robert Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, rolled onto bookstore shelves in March 2000, at the very peak of the dot-com boom. In the book, Shiller predicted the meltdown of the booming 90s stock market. He was spot on. The market plunged. His book became a global bestseller. Now, Shiller takes aim at what he sees as a groaning bubble in the real estate market. Get ready for a crash there, he says. A crash that could hit very close to home, maybe your home. Prices in red-hot markets like New York, Boston, San Diego could fall as much as 40% within the next few years, says Shiller. The only thing keeping prices so high now, he says, is the expectation that they will go even higher. But there's a limit, he says, and we're there. Not everyone agrees, but Shiller's got a record you cannot ignore. Tonight on Point, economist Robert Shiller, more irrational exuberance and the future of real estate. We begin tonight with a look at just how high home prices have risen, which markets are getting out of sight, and what happens when the real estate boom ends. Kathleen Madigan wrote the current Business Week cover story, After the Housing Boom, What the Coming Slowdown Means for the Economy and You. She joins me now from New York. Kathleen, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to be here.
So where have we come to in the real estate, in the housing market, Kathleen, and where are we headed?
Well, yeah, I have to totally disagree with Professor Shiller, because I don't think that we're in a bubble nationwide. And, I acknowledge that there are some areas that are overpriced. But if you look at the past, I mean, the most that home prices nationwide have ever fallen is 8%. And that was during a recession, and no one's forecasting a recession in 2005 or 2006.
We take your point, and we're going to have this argument tonight. We wish you'd lay out the basics for us. I mean, we understand you quote Richard Berner, chief economist at Morgan Stanley, saying the prices will rust, not bust, for the next few years. But give us the basics. How high, how fast is this still growing? Has the downturn already begun? Is the boom over?
No, I think, you know, it's probably going to be in the summer where we see things start to soften. I mean, we've had 4 years of just record-setting pace of sales. Prices have risen 8% a year on average. Housing wealth has gone up 10% a year for the average household. So we've enjoyed a really good long run.
Does it mean, I mean, your headline suggests that the boom is finished?
Right. But again, you know, for this year, we think that 2004 was the top. But the declines are going to be, say, 5 to 7% in sales and starts. And home prices, you know, they're probably going to be flat or maybe rise as much as inflation. And, you know, that's not bad, except when you compare it to what we've gotten used to.
Walk us through what rising interest rates mean. You've got a little scenario here, a home buyer with an income of $100,000 and a $40,000 down payment, a 30-year fixed mortgage at 5%, they can afford a house that's maybe $420,000. At 6%, what is it? At 7%, what is it, Kathleen?
At 6%, it goes down to $390,000, and then at 7%, it goes down to $362,000. And so that's a drop of 13% from the 5% that we, you know, that people were getting, say, last summer.
And, of course, some Americans will readily remember when interest rates got up in the teens in the early 80s.
Oh, yes. That's when I first started covering housing. Yeah, I remember that was the mortgage payments were just astronomical, and, you know, home prices were only about $60,000 a year, you know, for the house.
What's going on today with new homes that are built versus homes that are being bought? Are we building more than we're buying? How's that stand?
Actually, if you talk to realtors and the home builders, they say that the demand is still outstripping supply, and that builders certainly have a huge backlog of orders. Now, that's going to help housing in 2005, but really by 2006, we don't expect many new orders to come online, and that's when housing is probably going to be a drag on the economy.
And how does the drag on the economy work? If the boom cools, let's say not crashes, we'll hear from Robert Shiller, but let's say it just cools, how does that filter through the economy?
Well, you know, you're going to get some drop off, and, you know, construction adds to the economy. So if you don't have as many homes being constructed as you had last year, it subtracts from economic growth. But what we point out in the cover story, the more important thing is that people have been refinancing their mortgages and taking money out, what they call cash outs, and also taking on home equity loans because interest rates have been so cheap. And that has fueled consumer spending by a tremendous amount since 2000. And that is what's going to dry up and have a bigger drag on the economy than just home building per se.
Are you saying that an end to the housing boom could push the economy into recession?
No, not at all. But instead of having the economy grow 4% as we have had in the past three quarters, it's probably going to be closer to 3.25%, 3.5%. And, you know, that might not seem like a big slowdown, but it certainly means less job growth than we might be hoping for this year.
You do, at least in your headlines, point to some bubbles, not nationally, but regionally in specific metro areas. You describe, you've got here what you call Mr. Bubbles neighborhood. give us some of the highlights of that. What cities make that lineup?
Not surprisingly, they're almost all along the coast. There's San Diego, Los Angeles, Miami, New York, and San Francisco. I mean, this is where home prices have just shot up much faster than can be justified by the increases in job growth and income growth in those areas.
We're talking the last 5 years up 137% in San Diego, Las Vegas 103%, New York 94%, Boston 44%, not as high, but still up.
Right. And, you know, Boston, because you guys benefited from the tech boom more than, say, New York did, you started at a very high level as well.
How do you think Americans are going to absorb what happens over the next few years in housing, Kathleen? Is it going to force big changes in spending, in lifestyle, in outlook?
Well, I do think it's going to have a little bit of a drag on spending. I think it's going to have somewhat of a big psychological impact because people keep, you know, it's kind of you go to a dinner party and everyone likes to talk about how much the homes in the neighborhood have appreciated, and that's not going to be a main topic anymore. So people may not feel as wealthy, even though they really haven't lost money, but they haven't been making the gains that they're used to, and that could have a hit to confidence.
And as you say, homes will no longer be the ATM you can just take home equity out of.
Right, exactly.
Kathleen Madigan, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Kathleen Madigan, Business Outlook Editor for Business Week magazine. She spoke with me from New York. We are talking tonight with Yale economist Robert Shiller, who predicted the meltdown of the technology bubble in his 2000 book, Irrational Exuberance. Now, he's warning of a coming real estate market crash. You can join the conversation 5 years after the stock market fell apart. Are we riding a new bubble? This time, a real estate bubble. Is your home an asset to ride or its own little bubble ready to blow? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Robert Shiller. He's professor of economics at Yale University. The second edition of his best-selling book, Irrational Exuberance, is just out with a sobering analysis of the housing market. Robert Shiller, thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, glad to be here.
So you're looking really overall in the book at this big tendency of humans to glory in booms and bubbles. Last time you looked at the stock market, this time your eyes turned to real estate. Why?
Well, that's the new thing that happened. Or you might say it's a continuation of what was going on in the stock market. The stock market boom was interrupted by the recession of 2001. But the low interest rates that Alan Greenspan engineered then helped prevent that from really hitting the housing market. And anyway, housing market just kept going up. This boom has been going on since the late 90s in the housing market, and it's continuing very strongly.
You say irrational exuberance. Of course, that's Alan Greenspan's phrase that you brought into the book title. You say it really is still with us, that it's just migrated.
People have extraordinary confidence, even though prices are setting records, that they're going to still go up. I'll give you an example. We did a Carl Kaysen and my colleague did a survey of homeowners in various cities last year. In Los Angeles, the median expectation for home price indexes on average for the next 10 years was 10% a year, and the mean was 22% a year.
And this is people when it's already gone up 118% in the last five years.
That's right. You know, it's not professional. It's an amateur market, the housing market, and it can get clouded with bad judgment, and people have exaggerated expectations for the future.
And yet, and we'll go into this in some detail, but to get the top headline here, I was quoting Richard Berner, chief economist at Morgan Stanley, saying, home prices will rust, not bust. But I've heard you say, Robert Shiller, that you could see declines of up to 40% in some markets. That is a bust.
Although not overnight. We've never seen I guess the biggest thing, San Francisco dropped quite sharply in 2001, but then it kind of recovered. I think that we're maybe getting at the same thing from different ways. It's quite plausible that home prices would go into a period of secular decline, much like the example of Los Angeles from 1989 to 1997, when it went down 40% in real terms. But there's other examples. For example, Boston between 1987 and 1991, that's 3.5 years, declined 27% in real terms. So these things have happened before, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb at all to say that when we're going through such a huge period of price inflation that we're going to see these kinds of drops in many places.
But you're not talking generally in the language of a kind of just a slowdown or a slow rust. I mean, you're talking the language of a bubble blowing up, even if housing doesn't blow up as fast as stocks can and do.
The reason I call it a bubble is because its origins are psychological. And what the origin is, you've all seen it. People are talking about price increases. You feel envious because somebody else made so much money in the housing market. You get excited. You want to be part of it. You're worried that you're going to be left out. In fact, many people are investing in properties. Many more people are coming in. All these people are driven by the idea that they're going to make a lot of money. And when they're disappointed, they're not going to want to do it anymore, just like they gave up on dot-com stocks.
Robert Shiller, stand by. We've got to take a short break. There's a lot more we want to hear. We're talking tonight with the famed economist Robert Shiller, the bear who called the 90s stock market bubble before it burst, who's now calling a real estate bubble ready to burst. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with economist Robert Shiller, the bear who called the 90s stock market bubble before it burst. Now he's pointing at real estate. He's out with a second edition of his big bestseller, Irrational Exuberance. And this time the bubble's all about homes, real estate. You can join the conversation tonight. With all the money that's been poured into homes since the market meltdown, is real estate now on the edge? Or is real estate different somehow? Are you counting on rising or steady home prices in your personal finances? And what happens to you if real estate goes the other way? If home prices drop 10%, 20%, 40%? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Robert Shiller, I wish you'd walk us through the fundamentals of this as you see them. Is this problem looming because interest rates, everybody agrees, are headed up? Is it looming because the economy is not strong enough to support high housing prices? Walk us through the undergirding of your view here.
Let me say first that I don't want to give the impression that it's about to pop like tomorrow or anything like that. In fact, it might still be possible because the basic forces are still pushing up. It might be possible, you know, to still flip a property and make a good return. I don't know exactly when it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, what is driving? Now, the thing you bring up is interest rates. It's a very interesting phenomenon because we have seen a decline in our mortgage lending standards so that more and more people are being given adjustable rate mortgages who can barely afford them and who are given interest-only mortgages. These mortgage payments are going to go up, and interest rates are quite clearly headed up. And so people who could barely afford a home are going to be in real trouble. But that's only part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the bubble itself is much more of a psychological phenomenon than Kathleen Madigan or Richard Berner or others seem to want to recognize. It's about people buying their homes, and it's about the kind of feelings you've had when you've heard these stories about the boom in home prices. It's about anxiety, about excitement, about opportunity. And ultimately, these things drive the market. And the question is today, is the psychology changing? We've seen it change in the past. There's nothing new about bubbles. They grow for a while and get everybody excited, and then they go slidey, and then people get depressed and they pull out and they say, why was I so crazy?
You talk in the new introduction to your book about the last time you came out with the first edition of Irrational Exuberance, being out, talking with people about the book and about your ideas there. They would listen and nod along and then say back to you, but I trust the market. It's going up. This, as it was headed into a long and very painful slide, something in the psychology of human beings just not ready. Once an idea is fixed in their head that something's a strong, upward-bound investment, not willing to see it any other way.
Now, in fact, and this is a very important misconception that underlies the bubble, that home prices have not been a good investment historically. They have stayed level, practically level, for a century in real terms, corrected for inflation. And the reason they haven't gone up is because we have a wonderful construction industry that keeps on building them and keeps adding to supply. And there's plenty of land around. Maybe in certain places it's constrained, but overall there's plenty of land. But people, and Kathleen Madigan said home prices have never fallen. It's really not true. They've gone through secular periods of decline, as I document in my book. Mm-hmm. The first half of the century was generally, of the 20th century, I mean, was generally a time of falling prices.
But in the lifetime of most Americans now, that sounds like a foreign country. I mean, real estate has looked pretty good, hasn't it? If you've been investing in it since the, I don't know, the 60s, the 70s?
Well, you hear a lot of stories that may distort your vision. Certain places have gotten extremely expensive. But overall, for the country as a whole, home prices have been fairly flat. There was a big boom in home prices at the end of World War II. And after that, if you correct for inflation, overall, for the whole country, they didn't really do much until this boom itself. And this is the biggest speculative boom, maybe with the exception of the post-World War II boom, that this country has ever seen.
So if we're there and you're saying, you're not saying it's going to blow up tomorrow, but you're saying it's reaching its limits, if it turns the other way, what does that look like? How does it feel? What drives it? I mean, you know this idea that home prices are sticky because homeowners simply aren't willing to sell if they're not going to get the price they want, so it all, can't all tumble down like the stock market. How do you see it happening? Do you believe the stickiness notion?
Yes, that's definitely a phenomenon. And I don't know that we have any good historical experience to guide us as to what happens next, because we've never had such a big bubble. We've had bubbles. But what is suggested to me is that if there are major drops, and it won't be everywhere, there's lots of stable communities where prices haven't gone up that much, and I don't expect them to go down. But if there are, in a lot of these cities that have been booming, if there is a price drop, it may harm consumer confidence. It may bring on a recession. It may bring on problems for financial institutions that have lent, and we start seeing defaults on mortgages. And so it could put us into a recession. I think also that what's going to happen next is that we're going to have someone like Eliot Spitzer coming out and saying, what was this mortgage industry doing, making all these loans at rates that they knew were going to go up? And now everyone's in trouble, and we're in a recession. Then there'll be the blaming. But right now, when everything's good and everything looks great, there's nothing happens.
Why don't the prices – okay, they're high. Why don't they just sit where they are? I mean, everybody wants to live in a – everybody wants a nice house, and so why don't they just stay right where they are? I mean, are people vanishing? We're told we've got immigration. We've still got population growth in this country. What's the physical movement of people that leads to a downturn?
Well, one thing that leads to a downturn is new construction. You have a lot of sophisticated construction companies watching these high prices, and they say, I can build a house. That house is sold for, you know, $500,000. I can build a house for much less than that, and I'll sell it at a big profit. Mm. Now, they can't necessarily build it in the choice location, which doesn't have land available. They'll build it somewhere else, and they'll try to market it and attract industries. Industries will spread out. They'll move out of these high-price areas. That's been the trend. That's why home prices haven't gone up over the last half century most of the time, because they can build these things, and they will build these things. They're doing it now at a great rate. It's been a wonderful year for the construction industry, and they're going to keep doing it.
So cast your eye out across the country, Robert Shiller. Where do you see fairly steady housing prices going forward? And then, I don't know, where's your stair step of potential downturns, the 10%, the 20%, 30%, 40% downturns? Where do you see those?
Well, I think it's similar to the list that Kathleen Madigan just gave us. Some of the I might put it a little differently. The biggest home price increases have tended to be in glamour cities and in glamorous vacation areas. And they also tend to be in places where land is constrained so that the supply can't increase rapidly to offset the price increases. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are on the coasts, but not always. You know, like Las Vegas has had a spectacular boom recently.
A lot of land, but not a lot of water.
Now, the problem with Las Vegas is that the Bureau of Land Management owns a lot of the land right around the city, and it's not releasing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've got this checkerboard where some will say steady, these others. On the second home front, the glamorous vacation resorts, won't boomers continue to sort of flock there, throw their assets at that, no matter what the prices are?
Well, the last thing, no matter what their prices are, can't be right.
I guess that's true.
I think actually that some vacation – there are good investments in real estate even today. But I think that some vacation home properties are overpriced and because they've become a fad. They often tend to be celebrity sites. People think that this is a glamorous area. And I think people in buying vacation homes should look for fundamental quality, fundamental like a beautiful view or something that can't be reproduced, that the builders can't make.
Not just a fancy address.
Always keep that in mind. You've got to always keep in mind the supply, that we have this wonderful construction industry, and it just keeps churning out new houses. If you're going to buy for a long-term investment, you want to buy something that they can't reproduce.
Robert Schiller in New Haven, Connecticut, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Berkeley, California, John Quigley. He's professor of economics at Berkeley. He also holds appointments in the School of Public Policy and the Haas School of Business. He's director of the Berkeley Program on Housing and Urban Policy. John Quigley, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
So here's Robert Schiller. He predicted made a pretty good call at the end of the stock market bubble.
Now he's looking.
He did famously so. Now he's looking at real estate. He sees a big ugly bubble there and all kinds of woe inside. Do you share that view?
No, I think the analogy to the stock market bubble is very incomplete at best. You know, there's no national market in which housing assets are traded someplace in lower Manhattan. There's, in fact, some 320 local markets. The demand for housing is intimately connected to the fortune of these local areas. They're very incompletely synchronized. You know, housing prices have declined exactly 2 years in the last 42 years, mm-hmm. 2 years out of 42. So what we've seen in the U.S. in the past decade is prices, the user cost of capital, have been declining for the better part of a decade, even before the historic lows in interest rates. Now, as interest rates creep up slowly, you know, demand gets choked, and that's going to reduce the demand for housing. There's no question about it.
So you don't see a national bubble. What about in these sky-high locations in San Diego, L.A., Miami, Washington, Las Vegas?
Well, I think there are certainly places where housing prices will not increase nearly as rapidly as they have in the past. They will flatten off. They will perhaps decline. Certainly true in coastal cities, glamour cities. One thing to keep in mind, of course, is that coastal cities, glamour cities, what our colleague Todd Sinai calls superstar cities, are places where there is a fixed supply of a certain kind of housing. It's very hard to produce additional housing with a view of the Golden Gate Bridge or the Statue of Liberty. As incomes rise, people are willing to pay for this. In California, it's almost illegal to build new housing in some of these metropolitan areas. San Diego, where housing prices have gone up by 135% in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. the last year for which there are data, something like 1.2% of the housing stock was the amount of additional permissions to build that were granted.
But barely growth at all.
Mm. Barely growth at all. It's a regulatory nightmare. It's very hard to build. There are rents to firms that can build, and prices stay high.
Robert Schiller, what about it? There's a much more sanguine view of the housing market. How do you respond?
Well, I think that economists, as a rule, are not interested in psychology and don't take enough account of it. That what drives the market is the excitement that we see. And ultimately, as I said, the decision to buy is driven by a certain excitement. It's also driven by a certain kind of fear. I think that one of the important changes in our society is something that President Bush calls the ownership society. We have moved away from a welfare state to a more extreme capitalist concept, not just in the U.S., over much of the world. And people have become fearful about property. They've become worried that if I don't buy this house, I'm going to get priced out of it forever, and I will never be able to afford it. In the past, I did a study in my book of talk about real estate markets 50 or 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. There just wasn't the speculative excitement, except in certain places. There wasn't this national feeling about a boom that it's never happened before.
But that
we're
entering fear,
that a new century.
That fear, that belief, you're saying, is not enough to sustain the market. If people feel that fearful, then they're going to throw all the assets they can at the housing market, right?
Well, it'll be up and down. This kind of fear doesn't stay. It's manic depressive or something like that. When people are speculative, they're not constant in that. And the fear gets amplified at certain times when talk is intense. Right now, talk is intense for the last 6 months, or especially in the last month since interest rates have gone up. This intense talk puts volatility in the market. And I have to say, I can't predict it accurately. We may see some big price increases over the next year or two or more. But ultimately, this kind of talk also carries with it a big possibility of changing our psychology. We've seen it happen before, and when it changes, it can reverse with a vengeance, and then people will want out. Of course, not everyone will sell their house, but enough people will to bring prices down.
Talk is intense. There's no question about that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. John Quigley, what about the psychological factor here?
Well, I too think psychology is important and psychological factors are important. For example, there's a fair amount of research that now suggests that prices are quite sticky on the downside. That is, households will go to great lengths to avoid realizing losses. So rather than prices declining, the number of sales dries up, and so there are very few transactions. So rather than seeing housing prices plummet, we see very few purchases and sales of housing.
Is that sustainable? If that happens, do buyers stop lose their willingness to pay the high price because they don't see it going up anymore, or does it just sit right there?
It sits rather than plummeting directly. It sits for a long time at relatively constant prices because those who are selling are not psychologically adjusted to taking losses, capital losses, and they would rather take essentially the same economic loss by drawing out the number of months that it takes to sell. So that's, I think, an example of the way in which psychology really does affect the housing market and the asset markets in general, but it's not necessarily consistent with a bubble within the market.
Robert Schiller, John Quigley looks at psychology and sees it from the opposite angle. People just won't sell if they can't get the price they want.
Well, a lot of people won't sell, you're right. But some people at the margin will. And there are some people, you know, according to the NAR, National Association of Realtors, in the last quarter it was 23% of all home purchases were for investment. Certainly the people who are joining real estate investment clubs and watching TV shows and buying books about flipping properties, some of these people are going to lose interest when prices aren't going up anymore. And that's going to – and you have people now who, when they see that they've got equity in their home, they say, I don't want to let it just sit in one home. I'm going to take out a home equity loan, and I'm going to use that as a down payment on a second house. Those people are going to disappear when prices don't – when they look like they're falling. And so that means a small fall can get amplified into a big one.
A kind of domino effect.
Well, that's called I call it feedback, but yeah. It's the bursting of a bubble. And it's happened many times before.
And John Quigley, are you so confident that it won't come here? It's just got that stickiness. It's going to hold it up there, anti-gravity, no matter what.
Oh, no, no. I too, have read stories about people flipping condos in Miami, and it really does make me quite nervous. There is no doubt that in some markets and for some groups of individuals, this has replaced investment in shares or investment in other forms of economic goods and services. I guess I would counsel people who are tempted to do that to find some way to bundle these investments. And there are things like real estate investment trusts in which you can buy diversified pools of these properties, and people who think they can make a bundle on individual properties by buying and selling are on average not going to do very well.
So watch out, take care, don't count on that speculation working out, except people think about it in much larger ways than just speculation. Retirement plans are tied up here, paying for college tied up here, great big home equity loans. Listeners, I'm sure you know all about that. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? Make the counter case. Will real estate stay strong? How would that happen? Have you been investing in second homes, rental property, taking out home equity? Could you survive a bust? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Economist Robert Shiller with us tonight. His new book, or his second edition of Irrational Exuberance, is out. And John Quigley with us from Berkeley as well. Join us. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with economist Robert Shiller, the bear who called the 90s stock market bubble before it burst, who's now calling real estate a bubble ready to blow. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? New homeowners, what dip would it take to put you underwater? And long-time homeowners, are you counting on pulling a retirement nest egg out of your home? What if it's not there? We're at 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. Robert Shiller is out with the second edition of his big bestseller, Irrational Exuberance. We're also joined tonight from Berkeley, California, by John Quigley, professor of economics there and director of the Berkeley Program on Housing and Urban Policy. A lot of callers have been patiently waiting. Let me bring some of them in. Larry's calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Before the stock market crash in the late 90s, I actually drained all of my money out and invested in real estate.
Lucky man, smart man. And how does it look to you now on the real estate front? You ready to pull out there, or are you staying in?
Oh, no, I'm definitely staying in. I mostly invested in two families. But the one thing I disagree and agree with some of the panelists, I don't think that the market's going to crash the way that he is predicting. But at the same time, I'm a little bit afraid. These home equity lines of credits and everything that people are going for—that's what happened in the late '80s, and that's why things were so horrible there for so many years.
Larry, what gives you your confidence? You smelled trouble in stocks and got out. What gives you confidence in the real estate market that you didn't have in the late '90s stock market?
Well, like I said, all of mine are fixed rate. I don't have any adjustables or anything like that. And they're all two families. I have four two families.
So you've got rental income. You don't think you're going to get into a situation where you can't make the payments, and so you can kind of ride it out, whatever happens?
Exactly.
Robert Shiller, speak to Larry's circumstance. Does he look to you like he's in good shape? He's in the Boston area. He's buying two family homes. He's got fixed rate mortgages, so he's not going to see the mortgage payments shoot way up. Can you see it pinching him or not?
Well, apparently he said he's renting them out, right?
Yes.
So I think he's doing a service. We have a lot of people wanting to rent now because it's so expensive to buy. But now the question is, how will he fare in this business? He could be hit by big price drops. And so I think it's a risky business he's in. It's unfortunate, but... Of course, you know, we don't know exactly. There could be a bad scenario where he would have lost money, completely lost on this, on having done this.
But he's feeling confident he can ride it out, even if things don't go so well. He can cover his nut there and ride it out to the other side. You can hear that confidence.
Well, he can, maybe. I wish him luck. But the thing is that real estate has actually. It has jumped really in the current bubble nationwide. It has jumped something like over 60% in the last 8 years or so. And, of course, in places like Lexington, Mass., it's gone up much more than that, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. These don't look like stable prices on a historical basis. And it seems like, especially if we have a recession, which can happen, they've happened many, many times in history. And dropping home prices might help bring on a recession. So that could be a kind of a feedback. There is a bad scenario where he will not be not happy with how this business has gone.
Even in the hunker down mode.
Well, I mean, if he's borrowed to buy these buildings and they become underwater, yeah, he'll have negative equity.
Larry, thanks for your call. Let's hear from some more callers. Ali is calling from Salem, New Hampshire. Ali, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question.
Yeah.
I have moved to the Boston area following the job relocation last September, and we are contemplating buying in southern New Hampshire in the coming 2 weeks. And my question was, should I wait until the summer, or should I, go ahead and buy?
It's making you nervous to buy, Ali.
Exactly. All this news about, the bubble and the burst. So I am looking for some guidance in terms of the timing.
So let's hear some advice. That's going to be tough, but we'll hear it. John Quigley, I'm sure Ali speaks for many people who either they're first-time buyers or they've moved to a new area which may be much more expensive than where they lived before. You hear someone, everyone's saying the market looks toppy and it's hard to pull the trigger, to have the confidence to pull the trigger on a new home in an expensive market. What do you say to someone in that situation?
Well, I'm afraid I can offer essentially no advice about market timing in this. I think that people who try to time markets in this way are generally at risk. I think it's unreasonable for anyone to expect that the rate of price increase in housing over the next 5 years will be anything like the rate of increase during the past 5 years.
But Ali just needs a place to live, and he's moved, and he's trying to decide what to do. It's not really a speculator's timing issue. It's a man who needs a house.
Then I think he should carefully look at the market in the area that's accessible to his employment, mm-hmm. and I think he should consider those alternatives. And I think to hold off 3 months or to think that buying now or buying later is going to make a substantial difference is probably the wrong way to think about a long-run investment.
Robert Schiller, your comments tonight are certainly going to make Ali more uneasy about buying. What's your advice to him?
I first want to disagree with John Quigley that the housing market is very easy, has been very easy to time, relatively speaking. It has had such upward momentum for the last 8 years. It has gone up year after year after year. Lots of people made money by just buying into this boom. Now, of course, we don't know when it's coming to an end. And now I think that there are signs that suggest that it might be in the next few years. So riding this boom is getting riskier. I think that there's a good chance we'll see substantial price increases for the next year or more, but it's getting risky.
So are you advising people to rent instead of buy?
Well, certainly many people should rent instead of buy. It depends on individual circumstances. If you have young children and you want to put them in school, you want to settle down, I think you should buy even now. But be careful where you buy. Maybe don't overcommit to buying too big a house. But if you are one of these people who, maybe you're going to move in a couple of years, or mm-hmm. you're young and you're not married yet and you don't really want a house, those are the people who are pushing the market up, because they shouldn't be buying a house. They should be renting.
And rents might be just the thing for them. Now, Larry's calling from Brookfield, Wisconsin. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi. Great topic, guys. I'm one of these single-income, no children, no debt 40-year-olds who are kind of hoping that the market does take a dive, getting ready to move to San Diego, and really would like to be able to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about the role of wages as a limiting factor here. I guess that's part of a larger question about, where is the money, coming from that's fueling this boom? Because, $80,000 a year, I'm told I make a decent buck.
Yep.
I see wages going up about 3-4% a year. I see a fewer number of people in the middle class actually attaining that. And I'm told that statistically that's probably pretty close to the median household income for a place like San Diego.
So how are these housing prices racing ahead of those wages?
Right. Add on to that, you had the gentleman who said that he had flipped over his stock market profits into real estate, but we know that the stock market's not going to continue to produce those types of double-digit gains. So, are wages still the significant, do they still represent the significant portion of where this capital to fuel this boom is coming from?
Let us pick that up, Larry. Robert Schiller, are wages the limiting factor here, or we've clearly seen housing soar beyond where wages have gone?
Well, that's partly because of low interest rates. People they compare the payment with their wages, the monthly payment on the mortgage. And if interest rates are low, especially if they get an adjustable rate mortgage, we had really low. We had a federal funds rate of 1% just, a year ago. And so you could get really low payments, and that helps support the market. But as interest rates go up, I'm going to be worried about the price ratio between the price of a home and per capita income. And that ratio is now up to 10 in glamour cities in California.
That is 10 times annual income?
The median home price is about 10 times per capita personal income. Mm. And compare that with other states that are not boom states, it might be 2 or 3 times. So they're really highly priced in those states. And that is definitely a cause for concern, because people don't like to spend 10 times their income on a house. And if there's somewhere else where they can buy it for much cheaper, there's going to be a tendency for people to move that way. And not only for people, but for businesses. Companies will move out of California and move into these places where their workers can find cheap housing.
Let's get one more call here.
That's going to be a secular trend.
If we may. Gail's calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Gail. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's more a comment than a question, although I'm very anxious to get the book and read it. This reminds me a little of the Dixie Cream donut situation.
Dixie Cream, Krispy Kreme?
Krispy Kreme donuts. Where things were going up and up, and people started warning people against it, but there was this momentum. And finally, when it all burst, you found out why it was artificial. I had a conversation with some friends of ours today that are buying a property right now, and they asked for my advice because I...
Sounds like we...
And I told them I thought they should lock in a rate. They called a mortgage broker, and the mortgage broker said to them, no, things have changed.
You're cutting out on us, but it sounds like okay. Go for the ARM, and yeah, we've got that. John Quigley, on the wage front, if wages aren't keeping up with housing prices, do you see that as a break ultimately?
Yes, I think that the fundamentals of the housing market depend upon incomes, wages on the one hand, and the price of housing on the other. Interest rates are very important in computing what the price of housing is, and because of the rules of thumb used by lending institutions, the relationship between monthly payments and interest rates is highly nonlinear. That is, when interest rates go up, monthly payments go up more than proportionately. Mm-hmm. We're now in a circumstance where interest rates have been creeping up in a regular way. Well, this means that the monthly costs of housing have been creeping up in a more than proportionate way, and that tends to reduce demand. And that, for that reason, we should not expect prices to be going up in the next few years with anywhere near the rapidity that we've seen in the past few years.
Well, whether it's bust or rust and bust, it doesn't sound altogether rosy out there. We've got your two different views. Robert Schiller, we thank you for keeping your eye on all this exuberance and where it takes us. You give us a lot better sense of how people think about these things. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure.
Robert Schiller, economist at Yale and out with the second edition of his book, Irrational Exuberance. And John Quigley at Berkeley, director of the Berkeley Program on Housing and Urban Policy. Thanks so much for your thoughts tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
You can continue this conversation on Point at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. This is On Point. President George Bush will attend Pope John Paul II's funeral in Rome tomorrow, as will former Presidents George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, First Lady Laura Bush, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Former President and Nobel Peace Prize winner Jimmy Carter, the first American president to welcome a pope, this pope, to the White House, will not be in attendance. And whether this is a White House snub or a case of miscommunication is a matter of dispute that has Washington buzzing. Joining me now from Washington is Eleanor Clift, contributing editor at Newsweek. Eleanor, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Glad to be with you.
So walk us through what's happened here. We're reading conflicting reports of how it came to this. The Vatican gave 5 sort of prime real estate places to the White House. Right. Jimmy Carter's not going to be sitting in one of them. What's happened? Why not?
Right. Well, the initial story was that President Carter, when he realized that it was only a 5-member delegation, bowed aside so that somebody else could come. And frankly, having covered the Carter administration, he's a very independent fellow, and I think he might have seen himself as a prop in the president's party. And, you know, you can see more on TV and all of that. And Jimmy Carter is 80 years old now and has got a lot of things going on in his life.
Just might not need the trouble.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This might not really be that high on his list. But then there were some leaked comments that Bush really didn't want him, that Jimmy Carter has been rather outspoken in his dislike of this administration,
mm-hmm.
that he sat with Michael Moore at the Democratic convention. And so this may have been sort of, you don't really want to come, do you, President Carter?
his spokesperson, Mary Hoyt, saying, "I'm very disappointed he, that is Jimmy Carter, isn't going. I think he belongs there." There was a statement earlier saying that Carter had asked the White House whether he could join the delegation, but was told, sorry, full up space. Is it really more important for Condoleezza Rice or Laura Bush to be there than a former president, the president who welcomed this pope to the White House?
Yeah, well, you could make the case that that Jimmy Carter is known and admired around the world more than Laura Bush or Condoleezza Rice because of his work in the Third World. He's been very active overseeing elections. He's been in eliminating Guinea worm disease in Africa, which is a serious cause of blindness. So, Carter has always struck this sort of independent stance. And I do remember a Democratic convention where he chose to spend it at the ranch of Jane Fonda and Ted Turner rather than attend the Democratic convention. I think that was in 96. And, there was a question there, I guess, that they weren't going to honor him enough at the convention, and so why should he show up?
But you're suggesting there again that it may be Jimmy Carter himself who didn't want to go, whereas his office is saying something. I mean, he did say there's been no dissension between me and the White House concerning the Pope's funeral, but the body language looks like he wanted to be there, and President Bush didn't want him in the group photo.
Yeah. Well, why would President Bush feel that strongly? I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? I know that the first President Bush and Bill Clinton are now getting along famously.
And Bill Clinton
Carter is really the odd man out, and he's friendly with Gerry Ford, but Gerry Ford is now, I think he's getting up near 90, may even have reached his 90th birthday, and can't really travel anymore.
Could it be that Jimmy Carter in the photos stands as a kind of visual rebuke to the president he's been so critical of, whereas Condi Rice, you have a woman, you have a minority, you've got a new face for the world?
Yeah, but it's difficult for me to think that they think through that imagery to that extent.
Really?
It's
the White House. We think of image in White House these days.
I guess, but I think there should be some limits to good taste. I suspect the invitation was phrased in such a way that Carter felt like he wasn't wanted, and that he could have forced his way in, and that he was okay with that initially. And then, as the speculation built, he began to think, well, maybe I really should be there. And then the leaks, not only leaks, his spokespeople have said quite openly that he wants to be there, and then you get the leaks out of the White House.
And off goes the story. Eleanor, we're out of time. We're so grateful to you for being with us tonight. Eleanor Clift with Newsweek. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.